to Go Yard with Mama Mac, helping you to hit a home run in life when you feel like striking out.
All right, it's Go Yard time, and we are very happy to be on the air with you again tonight. Hey, Dr. Angel, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about you, Mama Mac?
Yeah, great. Excited about the show. My co-host, Dr. Angel Falsoni, and a busy, busy lady in your career in counseling, licensed mental health counselor, PhD, we might add. That's why we can legitimately call you doctor, which is pretty cool. Traveling around, doing all kinds of presentations. You're a busy woman.
I am. I don't sit still very well.
But the good thing is you're accomplishing so much in this whole area of mental health and counseling. It's just amazing. It's wonderful. So as we start the part two of this new series that we started last week, we're kind of excited about it because it's a very important series, isn't it?
I would agree with you. It is a really important series. You know, we're talking about dysfunctional families and understanding them. And, you know, it's one of those things that so many people struggle as an adult. And some of those struggles are really rooted in some of those dysfunctional patterns that we've had in our childhood.
Right.
And we don't realize that. So it's a great root discussion.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. So there's so many people that have gone through the very things that we're talking about here, because the title of this new series is Understanding Dysfunctional Families. And it's very important.
It really is important. It's a good root discussion. You know, like I said, a lot of people will struggle later on in life or as an adult, and they're not really realizing some of those struggles are really embedded and rooted in some of those dysfunctions that they had growing up. And, you know, I really think it's important to highlight that dysfunctions, a lot of times they just happen because people just don't know better. This isn't, you know, a lot of times a parent trying to hurt their child or something
right.
like that. It's just, you know, patterns of stuff that gets into families and just continues on. And so
exactly.
it's a byproduct and of some dysfunction.
And the problem is that so many children raised in these dysfunctional families have problems the rest of their lives. I mean, not every single child, but so many do, don't they, Doctor?
Oh, definitely. You know, we highlighted last week that some of the struggles that can arise from this are things like anxiety disorders and depression and
yes,
OCD
yes.
and relational issues. And, you know, we could probably make a laundry list very long as some of those things that really it continues to impact people's lives.
Absolutely. Yes. In fact, we talked last week a little bit about the negative patterns of parental behavior and how those continue to cause problems on down the road.
Absolutely. And so, you know, those negative patterns are really those dysfunctions that we're talking about. And, you
yeah.
know, last week we really went through and highlighted how dysfunctional families work. And although our list is not exhaustive, I thought it was a pretty good umbrella of a lot of
right.
Common dysfunctions, you know, and some of those, just to kind of recap a little bit, you know, rules are just, they don't adapt for individual needs
right.
of people in the families or situations. Rules are ambiguous a lot of times, and that really gets to be frustrating.
Right. When the kids don't know what to expect, right? One minute they might do this and get punished. Next minute they do this and it doesn't matter.
Fine. And it's fine.
Right.
And so that kind of helps, you know, create some of that anxiety in families of what's okay, what's not okay. And so those rules definitely have a huge impact on some of those dysfunctions.
Right.
Another big one are boundaries.
Right.
You know, a lot of times in dysfunctional families, either they don't have personal boundaries or they're often violated. So, you know, kids aren't growing up learning what's mine to take care of, what's not mine to take care
right.
of, what's, you know, and boundaries as simple as my skin, my body, my
oh, that's good.
Responsibilities.
Yeah.
They just don't get taught. And then we become adults who don't understand those boundaries, and it can create havoc in our lives.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of families like this, right? I mean, this is not something that just is so rare that we hear of. This is a pretty bad problem in our society these days.
I would agree with you. You know, just through the course of different patients that I've seen over the years, boundaries typically are something that people just don't understand and don't have. And
right.
I mean, I've had adults sitting across from me, what do you mean as a boundary? What is that supposed to look like? And it can be words that we're not putting people down and we're not talking disrespectful. It can be, you know, my personal space. It can be, you know, things that I need to be responsible for. A lot of times when people don't have defined boundaries, they're taking responsibility for things that they don't, like other people's choices or behaviors. Right. And they're not taking responsibility for the things that they do have power over, like themselves and their own things that they need to do.
And would you say that one of the reasons this is a real problem with dysfunctional families is because the parents or the guardians or whoever are in charge are so helter-skelter or just so there's no real consistency? Would that be a real problem as far as raising children?
You know, there are a lot of families that don't have consistency. You know, one of the first things I do when I sit down with the family is I ask simple questions like, what's bedtime? What's dinner time? What do our weeknights look like? Because that kind of gives me an idea. Does this family have,
that's
do they have any boundaries? Do we have some consistency? Do we have something that's predictable?
Right.
Because when we don't have that predictable, it kind of gives you a lot of those things that dysfunctional families have.
Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of a tip to you as a counselor, right?
Absolutely. And it's definitely one of those things that I'll assess in a family. And if they all look at me like I have 10 heads when I ask dinner time, then I know, okay, now I know we got to go all the way back to the beginning.
Right.
Of just having some kind of consistency. And then on the other hand, there's families that have such rigid boundaries.
Right.
That life can't happen in between. And so there is a balance.
Right.
You know, some families are just, I call them the drill sergeant families because they're just so programmed that we have to do this at this time and this at this time. And what if we're sick and it throws it off and that's not okay? And
right.
There's a lot of stress in maintaining these time frames. And so that's two boundaries.
Yeah.
Boundaries
yeah.
need to be flexible and fluid as
right.
well. So, you know, that's a great way to assess family.
Yeah, that's interesting. Drill sergeant families. All right. So, and I think that a big component, at least when I think about dysfunctional families, so often I feel like it has a lot to do with the abuse side of it, because there's so much abuse that happens in dysfunctional families, right?
Oh, there is. So
in
much.
All kinds of areas. I mean, you want to speak to that?
You know, well, when we think of dysfunctional families, that's usually the first thing that people think about are the families that have the chronic abuse, the emotional abuse, the physical abuse, the verbal abuse, the sexual abuse.
Right, that's what
we
neglect, normally think
and
of.
And that's
yeah.
what we think of.
Right.
So they're kind of the thought process of what we will envision with dysfunctional families. And those are the epitome of dysfunctional families.
Yeah,
and they
the
usually
epitome,
have
yeah.
so much other parts of the dysfunction under it that it just, it's overwhelming for children who come from those systems.
Right. Absolutely. So we started to talk about some types of dysfunctional families last week, and we really didn't get very far with that. So let's start right there. And we've already said this series is probably going to go for a few weeks. And one of the reasons is because I think we both feel the importance of addressing these issues, especially when our listeners listen and they're thinking, wait a minute, yeah, I grew up in that, and maybe that is why I'm having some of the issues I'm having now, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Isn't that the point we want to alert people?
Yes, we do.
This makes sense why you're full of anxiety, why you have panic, why you have fear, why you have, right?
Absolutely. And so because it's such a root issue and because so many people come from families that have maybe one or two of these dysfunctions, maybe they have a whole host of it, but it depends on how a person interprets this dysfunction,
right.
how it impacts them. So I may have someone, a client who comes to me who just came from, let's say, the abusive family, the
right.
epitome of all this dysfunction, and they may be extremely resilient and just show a little bit of those signs coming through their adult life.
Right.
I may have another patient that just had maybe some minor boundary violations or not predictability, and it just has riddled them in fear and anxiety for the rest of their life. So there's so much subjectivity to how this impacts somebody.
Yeah, subjectivity. Yes. So let's talk about deficient parents. And you want to define those? And
well, we're going to make a huge – talking about it is going to define that.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Deficient parents is one type of dysfunction.
Okay.
And really what they're doing is they hurt their kids by what they're not doing.
Uh-huh.
Not so much by what they're doing.
That makes sense. The word deficient. Okay.
Deficient.
Right.
So they're kind of follow more on the line of some neglect.
Okay.
So they may neglect to take care of the children emotionally or physically.
Right.
Now, if it's physically, we know that's true defined neglect, but there's an emotional part to this deficient parent. A lot of times deficient parents may have a mental illness.
Right.
Or substance abuse issue.
Right.
When I see parents of depression or anxiety, they're usually typically very deficient. What I mean by that is they're not picking that baby up and cuddling and oohing and on and looking in that precious face where that brain development's happening.
Uh-huh.
So they're not getting that emotional connection.
Right.
So
exactly.
I will see kids of this later on that are exhibiting signs of reactive attachment disorder, which is something that
What's that again? Reactive detachment disorder.
Reactive attachment disorder, which is just a really fancy way of saying they didn't learn how to attach properly.
Okay.
So those might be the kids that will just climb on anybody's lap and just love everybody, want to go home with them, a new stranger or anything.
Wow.
Or they may be those kids that are just so rigid, if you go to give them a hug, they like freeze on you.
Right.
Those are some signs of that. And usually we'll see that with children who've been removed, but children who didn't get that love and nurture and that emotional building.
Right.
Well, could also show some of that.
So oh, yeah.
A lot of times these are parents who just, they have so much going on in their own world that they don't have extra to give that child emotionally.
Right. Yes. And maybe they're kind of oblivious to the need of the child, right? I mean, they're
true.
So caught up in their own little world and their problems, whatever those might be.
True.
That they're not even seeing the need.
And very true. And then when you add substance abuse on a parent with this, you know,
right.
they're just so into, I got to get my next fix,
yeah.
the alcohol, the drug,
right.
the whatever
yes.
it is that these children's need. So what happens is the children learn to take on the adult responsibility.
Uh-huh.
The children kind of become the caretaker in this family.
Right.
And the peacekeepers in this family. They got to kind of glue it all together. I got to keep mommy or daddy happy. I've got to take care of my younger siblings. I have to glue it together. And where your birth order happens is a lot of times how much that will impact you. Older kids take on more parental responsibility.
Right.
Typically, but not always. And so,
and I would think, and I may be wrong, and you're going to say it could be, but I would think that the older child then would actually bear more problems. I mean, have more issues later
well,
on
they can,
because of that role.
True, because they can. I
they
am going to say they can,
because
there's nothing definite. This, you know, psychology is a soft
That's
science.
That's right, of course.
Yeah. But yes, some of it is they'll take on everyone else's problems.
Right.
Or they'll be the ones that overcommit to everything because they feel like everything's my responsibility. I have to take care of the world.
That's good, yeah.
So you have to watch out, like codependent relationships. Usually they're the enablers.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they just have this huge need that I'm created to take care of everybody else and I don't have needs.
Right.
So they learn to, you know, squash their own needs later on in life as
sure.
adults. So if you're the caretaker, you know, maybe there's some deficiency going on.
Right.
You know, okay. a lot of times in this type of system, the parents' needs take center stage over everybody else in that family. And so children learn that to exist only to meet the needs of their parents.
Wow.
Which is not why children exist.
No, absolutely not. They're not even allowed. If that's why they're here, they're not allowed to develop their own talents and gifts and abilities.
Not at all. And so I exist to make my mother or father feel loved and wanted and pretty
yeah.
and whatever it is that they need to feel. And so what happens is it creates the backwards balance in a family. So now the kids are there to make this parent feel everything that they need to feel.
Right.
While this child is becoming more and more empty.
Right.
So definitely can wreak havoc later
wow.
on in life.
Wow. And we all know people, situations like this, where the children have actually taken care of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mom's passed out on the sofa and they're, you know, putting cereal in a bowl for their baby brother or whatever. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, this is not an uncommon
not uncommon at all
in this day and age.
And, you know, and actually, you know, you'll even see it with a parent and an opposite sex child a lot, where that child has almost become that parent's partner emotionally, not physically or sexually, but where they share all their secrets with that child as they're getting older.
Yeah, right.
So it really kind of messes with how I have relationships and what they are as healthy.
Yes.
And so a deficient parent, at the end of it, really robs a child from their childhood.
Wow. 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 And how do parents handle that information if you're in a counseling situation? And I know you've been in many, many of those where you've had to point that whole problem out. Is that pretty hard for a parent to take?
Absolutely. It's hard. Nobody wants to hear this.
To realize?
And, you know, and the important part is to educate them on what the parent's role is.
Right.
And you're the caretaker. You're the one who's supposed to be meeting the needs of your child. You're the one who's supposed to, and just helping them learn to take some of those steps to make those changes. If they're in my office, they want to do it different. And so I help step them and give them the hope that they can.
Right.
Unfortunately, so many of them do this and I never get to see them, or they don't know it's a problem. And then it continues. But you can tell the kids, like even at school or when I do an intake on a child, I can almost tell you every child that comes from a deficient family, because they're the leaders, they're the caretakers, they're extremely independent. They never want anybody to help them. They don't have any needs. And you can see that even in children in school-aged years, early on in school-age years, starting to develop a lot of those traits.
And those traits, easily to recognize. But also you said the emptiness. Do you want to address that again? I mean, because I feel like that's a very important part of what happens to these children of deficient parents.
There's a huge emptiness because the message is that my needs are not important and I'm not allowed to have them.
Right.
So I'm not allowed to feel sad or angry. I'm not allowed to want a hug or a kiss or a good night story, because that's not allowed. And so there's a chronic emptiness. If I have this need to be loved, I have this need for hugs. We all have that innate need. And so what happens is these children become extremely vulnerable to predators.
Oh, I was just going to ask, what happens to these children? Okay.
And predators know that these children need to have needs, and so they know they make great victims because the parents aren't paying attention.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
And they have a lot of
needs.
That
makes total sense.
So these children can be high risk for victimization.
So predators actually understand
this whole thing? Oh, they know this whole science. Absolutely. They know the science.
Okay.
And they know exactly which kinds of children to look for. And the kids that come from deficient parents make great victims for them, because they have high needs for emotional connection, which they can cross the lines into sexual abuse.
Right.
And parents aren't watching the kids, they're not paying attention to the kids. And so they can get away with it.
Wow. Okay. Anything else you want to say about deficient parents?
I think we've really covered, you know, the kids, you know, what happens is the kids will start to feel guilty for not being able to fix their parent.
Know,
if a parent has a mental illness or they have a substance abuse, a child is not going to fix that. But they feel like they need to. And if I just listen and if I do everything right and if I clean the house for mommy and I take care of my younger siblings, it's going to be okay.
Right.
But it's not.
It's not.
It's not.
And, of course, in a lot of times with substance abuse, when the parent cannot get their drug of choice or their alcohol or whatever they need, anger flares. And so the child is trying to protect everybody in the household. The main child here that we're talking about, the oldest one probably, is trying to protect everybody from the wrath of
of whatever is going to happen. So it creates a very unpredictable, unsafe environment.
Oh, wow, yes.
But we don't want anybody to know it. So kids that come from deficient homes are experts at not letting people see what's happening inside their home.
Right. Yeah, so they cover it up.
They
do.
Right.
All right. Okay, so that's deficient parents. Let's talk about another kind of parents. How about controlling parents? We already discussed we're going to talk about controlling parents. I really want to talk about this because I think this one is less obvious.
It is.
I think it's not as taboo, quote unquote. It's pretty easy to see deficient parents, and the fact usually, in my experience, a lot of times that there's substance abuse or alcoholism or whatever, and that's one reason they're so deficient, or they're mentally ill. So those things are more visible, if you ask me. I'm just a lay person discussing this with you. But when it comes to controlling parents, I'm not sure that's as visible as deficient parents. I'm sure you're going to talk about how this develops and what happens and how do people become controlling parents.
Well, you know, when we talk about controlling parents, it looks like love. It looks like protection. It looks like I am being a really good parent.
Okay.
On the outside.
Right.
But what's happening is that they are not allowing their children to learn and grow.
Right.
And so there's a lot of types of controlling parents, but it really can present like, oh, look at how much, you know, this parent cares for this child.
Yes.
That, you know,
yes,
they're helping them do their late night homework that they didn't do for the last month and, you know, saving them from that bad grade.
Right.
That's part of a controlling parent. So what they're doing is they're failing to allow their children to assume responsibilities appropriate for their age and developmental level. So,
but they think they're doing the best thing for the kid, right?
Because my kids shouldn't, you know, chores? What are those?
Right.
So the deficient parent has the adultified kids. The controlling parent has kids who are adults that are kids forever. They don't pay their rent. They don't know how to pay their cell phone bill. They don't know how to get a job. They're 35 and still living in the basement.
Wow.
Because the controlling parents have not allowed them to have any responsibility.
But the controlling parents would say to you, we're doing the best thing for our child. We don't want him to get a D. After all, he's going to go to college and he can't have a D as a junior in high school. You know, he can't be flunking out of these classes. So I'm going to have to stay up all night and do his papers and do all that. Mm-hmm. And they have really, really good intentions.
Yep.
And I say all that because I've known some. We all
have
known some.
I have. I've worked with quite a few of these families.
Exactly.
I've worked with some really high flutin' lawyers who wanted to, you know, rescue their children all the time and then thought their children were going to go into adulthood and college and be able to just do this. And because they didn't learn that if I don't do the work and I fail, they went to college and then they got roped into drugs and roped into, you know, and they went down a slippery slope. So it's okay. Your kids need to learn to fail. Failure is a part of life and success.
Oh, my. Doctor, that's a huge statement. I think you're going to have to go back over that and talk about that. Your kids need to learn to fail?
They need to learn that my choice has a consequence. So if I choose not to do my homework, then my grade is a zero. Feeling that pain hopefully
right.
will motivate them to want to be successful.
Right, exactly.
But if I know that I don't do the work and I can still make the A, why would I do the work?
Right.
Why?
Or if they have a good friend they can cheat off of and get all the answers from. Or if they have a parent, which we're talking about parents, who will, you know, stay up till midnight, whatever it takes to get that paper written or whatever. You would think teachers would realize this doesn't sound like a kid. You know, when parents write papers and stuff.
You would think.
You would think there would be a red flag. Or, you know, when the paper sounds just like Susie's across the aisle.
Well,
you know?
What happens is controlling parents exhaust teachers. Because here's what they do. They put all the blame for their children's grades on the teacher. So if the child doesn't make the good test grade, then they're going to go to that teacher and make that child retake that test. Teachers get exhausted with controlling parents to the point where, like, I've got to give this kid a good grade or I'm going to have to deal with this parent who's just overwhelming me. And so it kind of creates this system of imbalance.
I think that's more today than it was many years ago because I was a high school teacher. I didn't have interference from
parents. Oh, today
parents.
It's big interference.
But what has changed in our culture? Because, of course, I was a teacher back right out of high school, so this is many years ago. But, again, I did not have that. I don't remember that ever happening.
And I've worked with parents who would have a child retake a test 5 different times till he got the grade he wanted to have.
You got to be kidding me.
Mm-mm.
Oh, my. Really?
Yes.
So
that's
so
controlling parents.
So the parents are in there so active. And I know now that with my grandchildren, I know that you can get online and you can find out what their grades are, et cetera. I know their parents, my children do that to find out what's going on with the kids' grades, et cetera. We got to talk more about this after the break. Let's have some great songs, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Call a friend and tell them to tune in right now to Go Yard.
Prompt professional service is what you will receive when you allow Marcia McAllister of Charles Rittenberg Realty to help find that perfect home or list your home for sale. With over 23 years of experience in the Tampa Bay area, you will enjoy a smooth transaction from start to finish. Call Marcia today at 727-417-0707. Now is a great time to buy or sell a home. Call Marcia McAllister at 727-417-0707. Is it time to consider a new pool enclosure or beautiful screen room for your family's enjoyment? Family-owned and operated, Boyle's Aluminum is the place to call for timely installation of all types of seamless guttering and screen enclosures. Boyle's Aluminum is A-rated on Angie's List and with the Better Business Bureau. Check out their website at boylesaluminum.com or call today for a free estimate at 727-504-9354. Mention this ad for a discount on your project. Boyle's Aluminum, treating you like family with honest and reliable service.
Tampa Bay's Tan Talk, entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
All right, welcome back to Go Yard, and as always, every Thursday night, we are right here live on the FM networks now of Tan Talk, which are 106.1 FM, and up in the Dade City, Wesley Chapel area, 104.3 FM. Also, just for a note, you make note of this, every Saturday and Sunday, our show airs at 12 noon Eastern Time on StarComRadioNetwork.com. So if you missed the show, you want to catch up, StarComRadioNetwork.com. Four words, 12 noon on Saturday and Sunday. And we're glad to be a part of that network also, which is airing our shows in several different cities across the United States and also on in different countries. So that's kind of exciting. So we're back, and I'm Mama Mac, and right here with me is Dr. Angel Falzoni and our resident expert. And we're talking about controlling parents because our topic is understanding dysfunctional families.
It is.
And we're in part two of that, and we have more weeks of that coming up, we think, because we got a lot to talk about, at least a couple more weeks. So controlling parents, just in, if they've missed some of the first half, do you want to just give an overview and then let's go on with new material here?
We're kind of identifying some of those dysfunctional types of families. So we outlined a little bit of deficient families. So those are the families who are neglecting to meet some of the need of the kids. And so now where those kids become a little more parentified and adultified, we're talking about controlling parents. And controlling parents, what they're doing is they dominate. They make the decisions for their kids way beyond the age that they need to be making decisions for their kids.
Okay.
Controlling parents really present like parents who are just really engaged and active with their families. How can that be a problem?
A problem, right, exactly.
But the problem is they're overactive. They're not letting the children learn from their mistakes.
Okay.
They don't give the kids responsibilities that are age and developmentally appropriate. So kids that come from controlling families don't ever have to do a chore. Mom's still folding their socks on, and they're in high school.
Right.
They don't have to think for themselves, and they become adults who can't.
And you mentioned earlier that a lot of times these kids are still living at home when they're in their 20s
yes.
and 30s, and that's become a problem in our nation anyway. You know, it didn't used to be that way, but it is now.
It's funny because there's a funny little comedy movie called Failure to Launch.
Yes,
I don't know if you've seen it.
I have seen that.
But that, you know, the whole premise is about these adult children who can't make that transition to adulthood and want stay living at home too long.
Right.
And these parents wanting them to go. And, you know, and this mom in the movie was still folding her 30-year-old son's clothes
yes.
and cleaning this and making him great breakfast. I'm like, why would he go?
Right.
Who's going to do that for him?
That's right. It's room service, you know.
It truly is.
All right.
those are controlling parents. Right. And so they do. They have adult children who cannot make that transition to adulthood. And they don't. And they, and if they try to, they get evicted and they can't make payments. And the parents are still rescuing them because they haven't learned that choices have consequences, that I have responsibilities and, you know, things I have to do certain things. They haven't learned to make choices. Mom or dad has always made those choices.
Choices have consequences. You keep saying that. And so controlling parents evidently just don't want their kid to suffer in any way. Is that
correct.
What I'm hearing?
No, they don't want them, you know, they don't, they're usually permissive. We don't use the word no ever.
Oh.
We don't have responsibilities
oh, yeah.
ever. And if the children start dropping the ball and not doing homework assignments, that controlling parent's going to be up doing it.
All right.
Because you can't let have a bad grade because that could affect their life forever.
Right.
And
okay, how does that affect then these kids in high school that get in trouble with drugs? Let's say
they'll do anything
alcohol,
they can to cover it up. So
they will try their best not to let them suffer those consequences either, right?
Absolutely. I worked with a controlling parent family who had money, and their son learned not to have choice. You know, choices didn't have negative consequences for him. So he started using drugs, and then he robbed his family of thousands and thousands of dollars,
wow.
and they refused to press charges. Then he beat mom up.
Oh,
they
wow.
still refused to press because they thought
it's
the damage of him having that charge would ruin his future, and to the point where the stress became so much, the mom ended up dying of a massive stroke.
Wow.
And it was that bad, but they would not press those charges.
Wow. And I've seen this in several families. I know you have too, where the protection over that quote unquote disobedient or, you know,
mm-hmm.
dysfunctional child is so bad, and yet the parent just continues to cover up.
And they cover it up. And so we can't let them have that consequence. So
right.
I will hire the best attorneys. I will do whatever I can to get these charges dropped. We won't call the police. I'll make restitution so they won't press charges. Whatever
right.
we can to keep this kid from facing a negative consequence.
Right. And so the reaction in the kid is,
I can do whatever I want to do,
exactly.
and it doesn't matter.
Right. Doesn't matter. I can get by with it. It's going to be okay. My dad will bail me out, whatever happens.
It's going to be okay. And so I have full reign to do whatever I
yep.
want. And we know that life doesn't work that way.
Right.
So these controlling parents, they kind of keep their kids in a bubble. And they create these kids to be dependent on them.
Ha-ha.
Because,
right.
you know, there's this need in controlling parents to be needed.
Right, right.
And so I create a situation where my child, is, as an adult, is still dependent on me for making decisions or financial stuff or whatever. They create the system of dependence.
You know, we just talked about deficient parents. I wonder if there's a correlation here with the controlling parent having grown up possibly, not always, but possibly, in a home with a deficient parent, and they were always the one in charge having to take care of all the others and brothers.
That
and
happens, and that's an overcorrection. And
an
that,
overcorrection.
Absolutely, I've worked with some controlling parents that
right.
absolutely
that's
came,
where they
from
came from
substance
yeah.
abuse or mental illness
right.
or deficient families. And
so as a result, they're like, over, that's not going to happen to my family. I'm going to get married and have a good, stable family. I'm going to make sure my kids behave and da-da-da. You know what I mean?
True, because their childhood was wrapped in pain.
Right.
And so they don't want their child to feel that. So like we said at the top of the hour, a lot of these deficiencies don't come from a parent wanting to hurt their child. They
oh,
come
no. yeah.
just from sake of things in our family line or our experiences or our interpretations
right.
of our families. And so, yeah, that definitely not all controlling parents had that situation, but there are a lot who have.
Right.
And it's
exactly.
an overcorrection.
Overcorrection. Interesting. Keeping children in a bubble, that's also very interesting. So they're just dependent on the parent forever.
Forever.
It's like I've known a whole lot of people in my years who absolutely would not begin to entertain leaving the area where the parent lived. I mean, within mm-hmm. within 2 miles, between within two houses, within, you know, staying right there by the parents forever.
I've seen that, and I've
watched
seen
it so much.
A family with their adult children who a girl was never good enough for the son, and she didn't meet this criteria, that criteria, so he would break up because mom wasn't happy with it. Here he is, you know, she wanted him to have a virgin, and she had to be a Catholic, and she had to meet all these expectations. So now he's 40, and he still never had a serious relationship, finds this girl, falls in love with her. Oh, well, she's a virgin, and what's wrong with her? She's 40. He never married. He's almost in his mid-50s.
Wow.
Because mom would never approve. That
Whoa.
Is what we're talking
wow.
about.
Wow. And that happens in a lot of parts of this nation, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It happens. That's the dynamic that's going on. And the controlling matriarch, so to speak, of the family, or patriarch of mm-hmm. the family, sometimes is really the one that's like calling the shots for two generations down or more.
Absolutely.
I've seen that.
And so some of the things that, you know, I like how you brought up the deficient parent, but sometimes people who have a difficult time conceiving can become controlling parents. People who've had multiple miscarriages or losses of pregnancies
sure.
can become controlling parents, because it's really rooted in fear.
Right. It's fear.
And I'm fearful that something's bad's going to happen
right.
to my child. So
right.
I'm going to do everything I can and make sure that there's no negativity in our life and no hurt
right.
in our life. And so it's definitely fear driven.
Absolutely.
But what happens is you are teaching your child to live in fear. So when a child does become an adult and say they can launch into adulthood somewhat, they're fearful to make their own choices. And if
yes.
I do, the parent will look at this as a betrayal.
Uh-huh.
You are betraying. I've given you everything. How dare you decide to be an engineer when you need to take over the family business? Or how
right.
dare you
exactly.
marry this woman?
Mm-hmm.
I'm the woman in your life, or, you know, the man in your life, if it's a father or whatever. And so it can create a lot of havoc.
And in those dynamics, when that happens with a mate and the child does not, the child steps out of the control of the parent and marries the person they want to, a lot of times those controlling parents make life
hell. A lot of times they'll ruin the relationship if because that's what they do. And
right.
so and so
how
this
dare
adult
you
child
do what
is,
I told you not to do.
Absolutely.
You know?
So they're torn between my new family I've created, my wife and children, and my family of origin, and they're constantly in conflict between the two, and they love both of them, but
right.
they can't have both of them at the same time. And so, yeah, a lot of those relationships don't last.
Right.
Because
it's just too hard, you know. Yes. So that's interesting.
And so they'll feel resentful. So these adult children grow up, they feel powerless. They'll feel resentful. They feel inadequate. So these are a lot of deep, hardcore feelings inside a person. And you talk about a male that comes from a controlling, where he's supposed to, you know, grow into adulthood and have that power and have that, you know, ability to make choices and that ability to lead a family, or even a woman, but they don't. And they're very insecure, and they're, you know, not sure of things. And so it definitely holds
them
back.
Insecurity, and you said fear earlier. And
mm-hmm.
I think this has a lot to do with it, because there's so fear of displeasing the controlling parents or parent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're so afraid of doing it wrong, whatever it is, picking the wrong mate, having the wrong career, buying the wrong house, you know, on and on and on. And that fear is just deeply rooted, isn't it, in a lot of the
yes.
children of controlling parents.
And so to do something against what my parents' wishes are is a disloyalty to the family. It could be grounds for you to be kicked out of the family, or for no
right.
one allowed to talk to you in that family. And, you know, we can throw culture in here.
Yes.
You know, you can throw like Italian culture, which is really strong, or, you know, Hispanic culture, and it could mean a lot of loss for that person to do anything outside that family.
It goes into the LGBT community too.
Absolutely.
Because so many of these people, these kids, grow up and they know that it is unacceptable to be gay if you are gay, to you know, admit that or whatever the case may be. And so it becomes very painful, I think, for a lot of these kids coming out of families with controlling parents. How do I tell my mom that I'm gay? You know, how do I deal with this? You know, it can be very, very difficult.
Absolutely. And it's a huge issue, because LGBTQ, which is questioning youth,
right.
make up 5 to 7% of our population.
Okay.
They make up about 45% of the homeless population.
Wow.
So what does that tell you?
Wow.
Most of them have lost a lot.
Oh, I had no idea those numbers.
Yes.
No idea.
And so that's a huge epidemic.
45% of the homeless
youth population.
Well, you hear these stories of people being kind of kicked out of their family or, okay, you don't get any money anymore, or you don't get this, you don't get that. Yeah, you hear those stories.
I hear them all the time. And, I mean, I sat across from families, I wish my child would be dead than gay or this or that. And
because the controlling parent has a perception, has a idea of what they want their children, their family to look like, and they don't want to admit that.
And that doesn't fit their schema of what they want.
And they don't want to admit, perhaps, that one of their children is gay or
so. And
or
if their child denies that identity, then they have a ton of guilt, depression. They're highly suicidal because now I'm denying who I am.
I know they're highly suicidal.
Fit my family schema. So it's a conflict either way.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's absolutely a great point that you brought
that up. All right. That point, let's talk about religion too in that respect. Okay. Because this doesn't just happen in families that have, you know, a gay child or whatever.
Not at all.
This happens in families where the child grows up in, let's say a Catholic family. Everybody's been Catholic back for five generations. This is just, I don't know anybody like this. I'm just throwing these metaphors out of here just to get you talking, doctor. But then a child grows up and feels the call in ministry, becomes
A Protestant, a Baptist,
let's say, and really just walks away from the norm of that family and no longer will go to mass, no longer will do this. I do know people like this, I guess, come to think of it, that I have had to battle this, mm-hmm. that have come out of that structural religious system, let's call it that. They've grown up in that, and now they are actually saying, no, I cannot go along with that anymore. Here's what I believe, and here's what I'm going to do. It causes tremendous pain in families. I've seen it.
Yes,
I know this one. I've
and
seen
so
it.
So to choose to do what I feel like I'm called to do means I am being disloyal to my family, and it's this conflict that tears this person on the inside, because I'm hurting somebody. Am I hurting my calling and purpose, or am I going to hurt my family? There's no win in a choice like
no,
that.
No, the repercussions are terrible. And, you know, so often the person who's breaking out of the mold feels less than, feels like they are doing something terrible that hurts mama or daddy or whatever the case may be.
Yes, they do. And so a lot of times I'll get these people come into therapy as adults and they're just wanting to make an adult choice, and they feel so much guilt and so much pain about a career choice or a mate choice or a religious choice or whatever.
Right.
Because it's not what's okay with the family of origin, and that's that controlling family. And so it's hard. It's a hard system to break from.
Oh,
there's lot of guilt and it does make them feel very anxious, disloyal. There's a lot of depression that comes from kids that have this controlling family background.
Wow.
It'd be a challenging thing to get through as an adult.
Okay, let's talk about, along this same line of controlling parents, let's talk about the young man who brings a girl home and gets serious about this girl, and she is not, let's say, of the same quote-unquote class.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what
you mean. Yeah, we really don't have classes, but we really do in America. Middle class, lower class, upper middle, high class. I mean, we do have that. And let's say the little rich boy who comes home and the parents are extremely controlling and have his life patterned out, and they have the mate already picked out. And in some societies, they do have the mate actually picked out. Right.
Yes, they do. And it still happens. Or they have the acceptable scope of who you can choose as your mate picked out. And they have to, you know, meet certain criteria. You know, it's funny because that's kind of what happened with my first marriage. You know, I was not of the same class, at least in the perception of my in-laws. And so I have been deemed white trash.
Oh, wow.
It led to a failed marriage. And to the point, I'm still deemed in that family as white trash. And I find it funny because for white trash, I did pretty good. you know, becoming a doctor.
Yes, you certainly did, Dr. Angel Felsen.
To the point my kids asked me, Mom, what does that mean? You know, that white trash, that's what they that's what they call you. And I'm like, well, it's not nice, but it's not true either.
Right.
But perceptions can run deep and long and can destroy a lot. And so.
And it can lead to huge marriage problems where that.
And it's not even have to be a true perception. It can just be someone's perception.
Right.
True. And this definitely is one of those things that carry into your new relationships because there's judgments, there's criticisms, there's you're like in a microscope. That's the best way to define is these parents are putting these kids in microscopes.
Yes, absolutely. With expectations that they may or may not be able to meet.
Unrealistic most of the
time. And a lot of times unrealistic. And, you know, our culture is changing in a lot of ways, but in one way because we are growing children to think for themselves, I think, for more than we did, say, 50 years ago.
We are. You know, it's funny because so much has changed. You know, generationally, we have learned, you know, so much in technology, so much. But we look at kids 50 years ago, and when they were 18, 19, they had the responsibility to hold a job, get married, pay the rent.
Yes.
Today, 18 and 19-year-olds.
Oh, no. They can't do that.
They can't. And I mean, I really struggle with that transitioning adult population because they have kids and be almost 30 and they still cannot take that step into adulthood. And
it is. And it speaks to the need to look at this in our own lives, right? Because that's why we do this show. Let's look at this in our own lives or those in our immediate circle and say, how can we be more tolerant? How can we be more accepting? How can we allow our kids to grow up and be who they? I got married at 20, and that was the norm. That was accepted. That way, everybody did that. You know, we had our own apartment. We had our own, you know, we were in college, but we still, you know, things have changed drastically. And it seems like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and we're running out of time here. We'll have to go on next week. But it seems like we're creating a generation that is more dependent on us than, say, a generation or two ago.
I absolutely agree. And I will tell you that one of the biggest contributing causes is controlling parents.
Okay.
So these are the parents that their kids have to play soccer 3 days a week, taekwondo 4 days
right.
a week. We have to go to 6 birthday parties on Saturday. You know, they have this mentality that it's just everything's about the kids. And so
the
I
whole
make all
world
the
revolves around the kids. They don't even do their own social things because the kid
they
has
neglect
this.
Their marriage, their friendships
right.
to put it around the kids.
And absolutely. I've seen this a lot.
So there's this underlying expectation that the kids must do what these parents want. I have sacrificed so much.
Right.
And so it's not healthy either way. We're overstimulating those kids, and we're not letting them learn and grow. And then they become adults who haven't learned to grow and to take a risk and make a choice and feel a failure and feel success.
And we need to allow our kids to do that. Whether you're one of these parents or maybe you're one that has had a controlling parent and you're struggling to get on your feet, maybe some of the information here in this show will help you. We're going on with this topic next week because we have so much to cover. Understanding dysfunctional families. Send your questions in to us. We want to address them. GoYard2014@gmail.com. If you have a situation you want Dr. Angel to respond to that, GoYard2014@gmail.com. And soon we'll have a question and answer show again. But while we're on this topic, there's probably a lot of people out there saying, I wish I had an answer to how to come out of this issue. All right. GoYard2014@gmail.com. Listen this weekend at 12 noon, StarcomRadioNetwork.com to our Go Yard show, 12 o'clock Eastern. And any other comments you want to make before we get out of here tonight, Doctor, and we will have to go on with this next week.
You know, the comment I want to make is I know we're putting a lot of light on some struggle, and this is kind of a long series, but stay with it. There is hope. There is a way to heal. There is a way to move on. There is a way to shed some of this negative influence into your adulthood and get through it.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about those positive
yes,
things starting next week. Yes. So tune in again to Go Yard. Next week, we're excited about what we're going to talk about, and hopefully this topic is helping you. Write us, goyard2014@gmail.com. This has been
Dr. Angel
and Mama Mac bringing you Go Yard. See you next week, gang.
Good night.
Hi, this is John Austin, host of the Book Club on the Tantalk Radio Network. I spent 35 years in publishing, and today I want to tell you about a book that could change your life. The book is No Cash, No Problem. The author is Dave Wagenfort. Dave Wagenfort is one of the greatest barter experts in the world. He's bartered over $500 million in goods and services. If you want to remodel your home, but the cost is just too high, or maybe there's an automobile that you have dreamed of owning, but thought you just couldn't afford, well, this book will allow you to do both of those things, plus hundreds more with little or no cash. Maybe you're a business owner with a cash flow problem that leads to low or non-existing profits. Read this book and see how you can increase your cash flow and your profits by time-proven techniques. The book, again, is No Cash, No Problem, and you can buy it now online at www.tantalknetwork.com. Click on the book and follow the instructions, or pick up the phone and call Lola at 727-441-3311. The book costs only $6.99, so do yourself a favor and buy the book today.